This is the fifth day of this July 2010 seven-day session. I'm going to take up a koan today from the Mumon Kan, since the first 4 days of session were devoted to Zen Master Mumon, Wu Men, and his teaching. I thought we'd just sort of slide into his what he's known most for, which is his the collection of koans that he compiled, the Mumon Kan. This is number 2, Baijiang and a Fox. The case is a long one. We'll just read the case and save the rest for later. Whenever Baijiang delivered a taisho, a certain old man was always there listening to it, together with the monks, and when they left the hall, he left also. One day, however, he remained behind, and Baijiang said to him, "Who may you be?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the far distant past, in the time of Kashyapa Buddha, I was the head of this monastery. On one occasion, a certain monk asked me whether an enlightened man could fall again under the chain of cause and effect, and I answered that he could not. Because of this answer, I have for 500 lives been reborn a fox. Now I beg you to release me from this fox body by saying the turning words on my behalf." Then he asked Baijiang, "Can an enlightened man fall again under the chain of cause and effect or not?" Baijiang answered, "He does not ignore the law of causation." The old man immediately awakened and, making his bows, said, "I am now released from rebirth as a fox, and my body will be found on the other side of this mountain. I wish to make a request of you. Please bury me as a dead monk." Baijiang had the head monk strike the clappers and inform the monks that after the midday meal there would be a funeral service for a dead monk. The monks thought this odd, since all were in good health. There was no sick monk in the infirmary, and they wondered what the reason could be for this order. After they had eaten, Baijiang led them to the foot of a rock on the far side of the mountain, and with his staff poked out the dead body of a fox and had it cremated. I'm going to stop here. There's another paragraph. This, I think, is the longest case in the whole collection. But the next paragraph shifts to a different scene, and this is where the gist of the koan is. So let's look at our main protagonist here, Baijiang. His Japanese name is Hyakujo, and we'll be reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage, The Masters and Their Teachings, by Andy Ferguson. He was one of the leading disciples of the great Ma Zu, who I mentioned, I think, yesterday, who had 139 enlightened disciples. And Baijiang was probably the best known. He began his career as a Buddhist monk in the Vinaya tradition. That's the school that focuses on a mastery of the monastic rules and regulations. It's not Zen. It's said that he was brilliant, exceptionally brilliant, and learned as a young man. And after his initial period in the Vinaya, working with a Vinaya master, he, as with so many other Zen masters, he then shifted to the Zen school, the Chan school, and he found the great teacher Matsu. Japanese is Basso. This is the story of his enlightenment. One day, when he accompanied his teacher, Matsu, on a walk, a flock of wild ducks flew overhead. Matsu said, "What's that?" Baijiang said, "Wild ducks." Matsu said, "Where'd they go?" Baijiang said, "They flew away." Matsu then twisted Baijiang's nose so hard that he cried out. Matsu said, "You say they've flown away." And at this, Baijiang came to enlightenment. Why would Matsu take issue with Baijiang's response, "They flew away"? Then there's a second scene here where he went back to returned to his room, and he cried loudly, they say. And one of the other monks asked him, "Are you homesick?" Baijiang said, "No." The attendant said, "Did someone curse at you?" Baijiang said, "No." The attendant said, "Then why are you crying?" Baijiang said, "Master Ma twisted my nose so hard that the pain was unbearable." The attendant said, "What did you do that provoked that?" Baijiang said, "You go ask him." The attendant went to Matsu and said, "What did attendant Hai, Baijiang, do to offend you? He's in his room crying. Please tell me." The great teacher said, "He himself knows. Go ask him." So the attendant loped back to Baijiang's hut and said to him, "The master says that you already know, so I should come here and ask you." And at that, Baijiang laughed out loud. The attendant said, "A moment ago you were crying, so why are you laughing now?" Baijiang said, "My crying a moment ago is the same as my laughing now." The attendant was bewildered by Baijiang's behavior. The next day, Matsu went into the hall to address the monks. Just when the monks had finished assembling, Baijiang rolled up his sitting mat, that is, his own sitting mat. This was the signal that he was leaving. Matsu got down from his chair, and Baijiang followed him to the abbot's room. Matsu said, "Just now, I hadn't even said a word. Why did you roll up your sitting mat?" Baijiang said, "Yesterday, the master painfully twisted my nose." Matsu said, "Is there anything special about yesterday that you've noticed?" Baijiang said, "Today, my nose doesn't hurt anymore." Matsu said, "Then you really understand what happened yesterday." Baijiang bowed and left. Here's another famous story. When Baijiang was attending on Master Ma, he saw the abbot's horsehair whisk sitting on its stand, and he said, "If someone uses this, can he also not use it?" Matsu said, "In the future, if you travel to some other place, how will you help people?" Baijiang picked up the whisk and held it upright. Matsu said, If you use it this way, what other way can it be used? Bai Zhang placed the whisk back on its stand. And at that, Ma Zu let out an earth-shaking shout so loud that Bai Zhang was deaf for 3 days. Here's another one. One day Bai Zhang said to another teacher of some kind, "I want someone to go and tell something to Chizo." That was one of his brother monks. Wu Feng said, "I'll go." Bai Zhang said, "How will you speak to him?" Wu Feng said, "I'll wait until I see Chizo, then I'll speak." Bai Zhang said, "What will you say?" Wu Feng said, "When I come back, I'll tell you." Now here's a very significant brief anecdote. This is when Bai Zhang was a master now in his own right, and he's one of the most illustrious of the Tang Dynasty masters. He entered the big Dharma hall to give a talk. When all the monks had come in and gathered, he suddenly leaped off of the Dharma seat and drove them from the hall with his staff. Just as they were running out of the hall, he called to them. When they turned around, he said, "What is it?" What is it? This question, "What is it?" is the primary breakthrough koan in Korean Zen. It's sort of their mu. And this is where it originated. Very simple, just like mu. Evidently, Bai Zhang felt he really had to do something dramatic to get the attention of these monks so that he would have their full attention. And then at the end of his, near the end of his life, when Bai Zhang was very old, we're told that in the daily work of the monastery, he was always foremost among all the monks at undertaking the tasks of the day. But the monks who were in charge, the supervisors, were concerned about him because at his age he was very feeble. And they asked him to stop working, take it easy, but he refused. So they hid his tools so he wouldn't be able to work. And then he said, "I am unworthy. How can I allow others to work on my behalf?" He looked everywhere for his tools but was unable to find them. He even forgot to eat while looking for his tools. And this prompted the phrase that still rings down today in Zen: a day of no work is a day of no eating. Until then, it was the Buddhist monks were not expected to do manual work. That was the job of the lay people, and sort of hands off for the monks. They were the elite. But Baizhang felt there's no reason for that. There's no reason why able-bodied monks couldn't do their own work. And he established this that continues now. It didn't seem to be the case at a Theravadin monastery that I visited in Burma. There, it was still hands off. The monks didn't work. Their job was to, well, I guess it was supposed to be sitting and meditating and reading the sutras, but I saw plenty of them lying around with big stogies. Boy, I wasn't prepared for that. It's a cultural thing. The Burmese, there's a big thing about cigars there. But to see these guys, they would lie back in their chaise lounges, you know, their version of chaise lounges, slouched way back with these big fat stogies. Well, that's all the material we have on this Baizhang or Hyakujo. I'll continue to use his Chinese name. I know this must be maddening for people for the way I switch back and forth between the original Chinese name and then the Japanese version. I like to honor the Chinese names when they're not too difficult to pronounce, because after all, these are Chinese masters. But sometimes it's just, I know I'm not pronouncing it correctly in the Chinese way and go with the Japanese. But here it's, I don't know, someone in China might recognize who I'm talking about when I say Baizhang. This is one of the most famous of all the koans and all the collections. Because it examines how what a difference enlightenment makes and doesn't make. Let's just plow into this. Whenever Baizhang delivered a teisho, a certain old man was always there listening to it together with the monks, and when they left the hall, he left also. One day, though, he stayed behind, and Baizhang sized him up and asked him, "Who might you be?" Something about him prompted this question. I mean, Baizhang couldn't have known all of the monks. I think there were hundreds there in the assembly. But let's just go with this. "Who might you be?" And this old man said, "I may appear to be a human being, but I'm not. I have the appearance of a fox, I know. I mean, I'm in the past, a far distant past, in the time of Kashyapa Buddha, I was the head of this monastery." They had to give him a human being appearance in order to have him talk. You know, of course, none of this is to be taken too literally. This is a story that has been created to dramatize as a story in a legendary form, to dramatize this matter of causation and enlightenment. So they couldn't have a fox talking, so they gave him the appearance of a human being. But he says he's actually a fox. "The time of Kashyapa Buddha," this just came up yesterday, I think, in Teisho, when we were reading from Wumon. Kashyapa is actually is supposed to have been the Buddha of the world cycle prior to this one. The the doctrine is that every eon of time has one fully enlightened Buddha. In our eon, it was Shakyamuni, and in the previous one, it was Kashyapa. So a long, 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 millions and millions of years ago, I was the head of this monastery. I'd like to know how they could preserve that monastery for that long, because that's on my mind a lot these days. On one occasion, a certain monk asked me whether an enlightened person, let's make it person, could fall again under the chain of cause and effect, and I answered that he could not. Because of this answer, I have been reborn as a fox for 500 lives. Now, please release me from this fox body by saying the turning words. That is, turning words means by answering truthfully, which I apparently didn't do. So then he cleared his throat, probably, and he asked this question that had such an effect on him. He said, "Can an enlightened person fall again under the chain of cause and effect or not?" And Baijiang said, "He does not ignore the law of causation." And at that, the man was released from his body as a fox and came to awakening. Now, the two answers then. The former abbot, now in this fox body, fox life, said the enlightened person does not fall again under the chain of cause and effect. Baijiang said he does not ignore this chain, the law of causation. This law of causation or causality, this is a cornerstone of Buddhist teaching, and certainly in terms of ethics and morality. According to this, everything we do, every occurrence is the effect of a previous cause. And itself, this every act of ours and every word of ours is the cause of a subsequent effect, a later effect. In other words, everything is causality. The Buddha expressed this very neatly. He said, "Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny." This points to the fact that it all originates in the mind. How we use or misuse the mind, more specifically, our attention, how we misuse our attention, how we direct or misdirect our attention. This is what the practice of Zazen is all about. We all know this by now, day 5 of Sesshin, that this is what forges our karma. It's another word for the law of causation. But what about the enlightened person? And let's make it real. Let's not muddy the waters and talk about just a simple initial little Kensho experience, but real enlightenment. Deep. Let's make it full enlightenment. What the hell? Full enlightenment. Well, it doesn't take a lot of reflection to acknowledge, to recognize that there's some kind of causation that goes on after even full enlightenment. A fully enlightened person is still in a body. If she is cut, she bleeds. There, causation. She stubs her toe, it hurts. There's pain after enlightenment. Many people can appreciate the simple physical examples like this. In fact, for a case study, we just need to look at the Buddha himself. The Buddha, we're told, according to the party line, came to supreme perfect enlightenment. And yet, we know that he got old and he died. According to the records, he died from eating poison mushrooms. This is after supreme perfect enlightenment. So this all seems fair enough. Okay, who's going to claim that even a fully enlightened person doesn't have the same physical laws as others? I think where it gets all tricky is where we think that somehow that on a non-material level, that is a mental or emotional level, it shouldn't apply. What is that? That we idealize the enlightened person to such an extent that we think that he or she should somehow be free of causation. If you have a body, you have hormones. You have a system of adrenaline and all kinds of other things that are squirting around in your body all the time. That's not suspended through enlightenment. You have emotion. You have an emotional life. That doesn't go away with enlightenment. You have feelings. You have anger sometimes. You have sorrow. You may have all kinds of other ignoble, what we think of as ignoble emotions, jealousy, envy. These things aren't wiped clean through enlightenment, these reactions. It's why in the four vows we say endless blind passions. Endless. In Sesshin, we have a good laboratory for seeing causation at work. No one goes through Sesshin without some degree of pain. Some people, a lot of pain. And again, I'm not speaking just of physical pain. But let's look at physical pain. I've acquired the impression over years of giving Doksan that a lot of people don't sit much between sesshins. A surprising number of people don't sit much. And probably a lot of people who come to sesshin don't get as much exercise. They don't do as much stretching. as they know they should. Let's make it we, as we know we should. And we come to Sesshin and we have pain. Why would that be? Why do we have pain? And why do we have thoughts, so many sticky thoughts that we keep getting bogged down in? Could it be related to the way we use our minds between sesshins, the way we allow the mind to run every which way because we're not sitting much? That's a big part of it. We come to sesshin then, and we are reaping karma. We're on the effect end of causation, this chain of causation. And so we have pain, physical, mental, emotional pain. So when the former abbot said the enlightened person cannot fall again under the chain of cause and effect, well, it's manifestly wrong. And one of my favorite reminders of this, you know, many of the masters, these same great Tang Dynasty masters and others, many since them, have pointed out that even enlightenment does not just blow out all of our obstructive karma. Here's one of, I think, the most potent expressions of that. This is a Tang Dynasty master, Kuei Shan. His Japanese name is Isan. I'm reading from The Golden Age of Zen by John Woo. This is what he said. If one is truly enlightened and has realized the fundamental, he is no longer tied to the poles of practice and non-practice. But ordinarily, even though the original mind has been awakened, there still remains the inertia of habit, formed since the beginning of time, which cannot be totally eliminated at a stroke. He must be taught to cut off completely the stream of his habitual ideas and views caused by the still operative karmas. And we read this from other of the great masters in this very text, the same book. I've taken pains over the years to make this point in Taisho every chance I get, and yet when people of long experience in Zen get into trouble, people still have this crisis of faith. How can this happen to someone? Someone who's gone through so many koans, someone who has been practicing for so long. Well, it's not an unfair question. But it shows a naivete about the staying power of some of our most deeply ingrained karmic obstructions. Now let's get to the second answer, the turning words, Baijiang's turning words. Baijiang says, he does not ignore the law of causation. And those are the words that brought the former abbot to enlightenment and released him from his fox body, his fox life. If the whole story was just endless obstructive karma that we had to reap, it would be a pretty bleak prospect, wouldn't it? But here's the other side of the story, is that each one of us has the capacity to transcend our obstructions. Let's go back to Sashin. We have pain. Let's make it the knee. Why not? We got pain in the knee, burning like fire. Now we know that because it is a phenomenon, like all phenomena, it's the effect of previous causes. We're reaping karma, some kind of misuse of the body-mind. Strictly speaking, it's all that. It has to be related to that. But now we have the ability to do what? To become one with the pain. If we don't, not only do we keep suffering, but we sow more of the same karma. If we sit dwelling in our thoughts about the pain, ourself and the pain, griping in our mind, whining and complaining, then we're just creating more of the same, because we are not in harmony with the way. When we separate ourselves from the pain, any pain, we are not in harmony with the way, the Tao, and that means we are creating more painful karma. But if we find a way through this practice, the breath, the koan, whatever, if we find a way to not separate ourselves from that effect of previous karma, then we are expiating karma, cleaning up our karma, and at the same time creating more good karma. Now, technically, in the old texts, they don't talk about good karma. It's either you're either creating painful karma or you're not. So in other words, it's up to each one of us and as to how we use our attention. The Buddha: it is mental volition, O monks, that I call karma. Having willed, one acts through body, speech, or mind. Volition basically means willing our attention to be on the practice or not. Let's get away from physical pain and look at the mind and emotional pain. Harada Roshi, in his 80s, he told Philip Kaplow at the time in Japan that as a young man he had a terrible temper, and that he thinks that had he not gotten into Zen practice, he would have killed someone. He had such a nasty temper. But he got into practice. He channeled that energy and into practice, probably Mu. And he was able, through that focusing of his strong spirit, he was able to have a first initial awakening experience. But he said it took him 10 years of rigorous training, monastic training, 10 years after that first little Kensho, before he felt he had gotten free of his anger. How do you get free from anger? It arises. Remember, we have body, we have hormones. Anger happens. It flares up. But what perpetuates that negative effect is clinging to the anger. And that means dwelling in it and thoughts of it, thoughts of getting back at the person, rehearsing what you're going to say to that person, what you're going to do to that person, what you hate about that person. This is the chain of causation of the average person, is getting stuck in nursing the anger with thoughts. With thoughts. Harada Roshi said, the enlightened person also gets angry, but for him or her, it is like snow falling on wet pavement. It doesn't last as long. Because one has realized that clinging to thoughts is living in delusion. One has realized, the enlightened person has realized that, and that means she or he is less likely to do it, less likely to do it for very long. So it is also false to say that the enlightened person is lashed to the chain of cause and effect, just like everyone else. This would be go the other extreme. It's not that there's no difference after awakening. And that's why the enlightened person does not ignore the law of causation, does not evade the law of causation, does not deny the law of causation. I think what we need to do here is to stop now and resume this tomorrow. It's just too much material to try to cram into the last few minutes that we have. So tomorrow will be part two, and we'll now recite the four vows.